Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello and welcome to the ID the Future podcast. This is Casey Luskin broadcasting here in Seattle, Washington with Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. We recently had Dr. David Berlinski on our show with us talking about his new book, The Devil's Delusion, Atheism and Its Scientific Pretensions. We have him still in the studio with us today. He's here all the way from Paris for a book tour about his new book, The Devil's Delusion. As we all have heard about this new movie, Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed, with Ben Stein, Dr. Berlinski is actually one of the scientists featured in that movie who talks about intelligent design and Darwinian evolution. And so it's wonderful to have you here with us to talk about the movie today.
My pleasure.
First of all, I'd like to know, why did you decide to participate in the Expelled movie project?
They asked me.
They asked you.
I'm not about to turn down any occasion such as that.
Obviously, I think you participated somewhat willingly. We've heard some of our atheist friends, Richard Dawkins, P.Z. Myers, lamenting that they participated. Do you feel that it was a good thing to participate in?
Yeah, I was very pleased with the whole thing. They came to my apartment. They filmed me. They filmed my apartment. I had no problems. P.Z. Myers and Richard Dawkins are fulminating in the media because they claim they were deceived about the nature and objectives of the film. Well, not me. I cannot understand how they could have gotten so confused.
Do you feel that the Expelled people told you a different story than they told P.Z. Myers or Richard Dawkins?
No, I got to figure they told everyone the same story.
Okay, very interesting, very interesting.
We all signed a release and a contract.
Sure, and you got paid, I assume.
Oh, yeah. You don't get me to appear in a film without that.
Well, we'll make sure we give out your agent's number before the podcast is over.
Absolutely.
Okay, I assume you've seen the movie.
I've seen a version of the movie. I'm not dead certain it's the version that's going to appear in the theaters.
Okay. Well, can I ask you, the version that you did see, which may not be the final version, what did you think of the version that you did see?
I thought it was compelling and interesting. I certainly had many things that I would have changed, needless to say. I would have handled the camera lighting differently. I would have edited the film differently. But, you know, that's kibitzing. It's after the fact. I thought it was a very interesting, compelling movie.
Okay.
I thought it should have much more meat.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I think that's the feedback we get from everybody who saw it. I will say, however, Dr. Berlinski, that I thought your interviews were a lot of fun and very engaging, and they really helped, I think, the viewers to understand some of the core problems with neo-Darwinism.
Up there, 20 seconds on the screen, it took 2 days to shoot.
It's amazing how they can slice and dice you.
Oh, it is.
Well, what about the core theme of the film, this idea that there is a threat to the academic freedom of skeptics of Darwinism in the academy? Is this just some big conspiracy theory that's been invented by Ben Stein and his associates, or is this something that's real?
How do you invent a conspiracy theory of that magnitude and do it successfully? No, it's not a conspiracy theory. Speaking personally, of course, I'm under no threat whatsoever because I have no academic job, no academic position. I'm not affiliated with any academic institution. And there's nothing they can do to me except make my emails unpleasant.
Sure.
But in the larger aspect, the scientific and the academic community, there really is not necessarily a draconian threat. Nobody's going to be put up against a wall and shot.
Sure.
We're not talking about that. But there's an unpleasant atmosphere of intimidation throughout the academic world now.
Well, sure, and you have been an academia. You've been at Stanford and Princeton and other places, and you've taught in many universities.
Yeah, but I burnt all my bridges before I crossed them.
Oh, there you go. So were you an open Darwin skeptic when you were in your teaching days?
Yeah, but nobody even noticed.
Nobody even noticed.
They were so busy objecting to other aspects of my I mean, that was just a little bit of fluff.
That's good. Well, if you're so controversial, maybe you can get away with being a Darwin skeptic,
I suppose. I wasn't controversial. I was just obnoxious.
Well, that's one piece of advice, then, for those Darwin skeptics out there. One way to get by.
Keep your head down.
Really?
Until you have tenure.
Okay, until you have tenure.
Until you have tenure. Then shoot your mouth off.
And you're not the first person on this podcast to give that advice. Matter of fact, that's a very common piece of advice. Is it really that bad that you've got to keep your mouth shut until you get tenure?
Well, it depends on what you mean by that bad. If you're prepared not to get tenure, go speak.
Fair enough.
If tenure is really important to you, as it never was to me,
okay.
Well, then be careful.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. Speaking of controversial, obviously one of the most controversial aspects of this film is the Darwin to Hitler link that's discussed in the movie.
I don't know why. I don't know why that should be such a controversial subject. It seems to me plain as the light of day. These people were not reading the Gospels.
Sure.
That is Hitler and his entourage.
Okay.
If they weren't reading the Gospels, just what ideas influence them. Other ideas. I mean, let's have a remarkable stretch of the imagination. We certainly want to acknowledge they were influenced by something, and we've eliminated the Gospels. What doctrine seems suspiciously close to Hitler or the Nazi doctrine about the elimination of inferior races, a battle of extermination between races? Well, it seems remarkably close to Darwin's original idea in 1859 that species were locked into competition, and the loser was, I mean, I'm searching for the right word, eliminated, exterminated, not made terribly happy in the competition.
Sure.
These ideas percolated right through German biology, German social hygiene, eugenics program, not only in Germany, but in England and the United States as well. When Chief Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes legalized or rendered a decision about eugenics, and he said, three generation of imbeciles is enough. Where did he get those ideas from? What was he reading? What was he thinking? So the connection is there. Richard Weikert wrote a very good book, The Connection Between Darwin and Hitler.
Sure.
But you don't need a book. You just have to look at what they said one to another to realize that they were participating in a movement of ideas that really did have its origins in Origin of the Species, because for the first time, Darwin made it overwhelmingly plausible to think of human beings as accidents of creation. Once that fateful step is taken, everything else follows.
I personally am not an expert on history. My background is science and law. And so from my vantage point, I'm not qualified to assess, you know, what were the motivating factors behind Hitler.
No, nobody's qualified to assess it. I mean, we're dealing not with a theoretical issue in philosophy, but living human history.
Sure.
It's very complicated.
Sure.
And we don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know. There are very few things we can say with certainty. One of the things that's completely unhelpful that we can say with certainty is without Hitler, there would have been no Second World War and there would have been no Holocaust.
Yeah.
He was that important.
That's
that
true.
Important. Ohne Hitler, as the Germans say, ohne Krieg. But beyond that, this was a huge movement.
Yeah.
It occupied at least 5% of the entire German population
as
Nazi Party members.
Yeah.
And it had an immense degree of historical resonance. I mean, these ideas didn't suddenly appear on the horizon. It wasn't that Hitler and Himmler and Heydrich and all the other scum that were participating in the leadership of the Third Reich suddenly smacked their foreheads and said, hey, I got a great idea, let's kill 9 million European Jews.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't do that.
Absolutely.
They were influenced by other doctrines.
Yep. You absolutely have to be right. One of the striking things from this movie is that I think people who walk into the movie thinking that intelligent design or the, you know, those scientists that are skeptical of Darwinism represent just some cabal,
lunatic fringe
of the right-wing Christian movement. I think that they will walk out of this film really scratching their heads, rethinking things. Can you elaborate on that for us a little bit?
Well, it's a rosy prediction. I hope it's true. I have no way. I don't think anyone has any way of telling whether it really is true. We'll see.
Yeah.
The film could be an outstanding success. It could change some minds.
Yeah.
It could also be an abysmal failure. We just have to wait and see. That's, again, the nature of human history. We have to wait and see. Interesting observation, because we have such limited predictive powers when it comes to our own lives and our own affairs. One reason that physics plays such a limited role in our life and our affairs. But whether it will change minds, the question you raise is, will it be seen as the propaganda vehicle of the Christian right? By some people, without a doubt. You know, my presence there as a secular Jew may give some people pause, but the propaganda war is almost autonomous. It functions on its own.
This is
true. It has nothing to do with facts, logic, reason, evidence. It is simply a self-perpetuating entity.
What do you think are the key weaknesses of neo-Darwinism that you talk about in the movie?
You know, I'm struggling to remember exactly what pearls of wisdom I offered, and I can't remember what I said about neo-Darwinism. So I will have to beg your pardon, because I'm not quite sure we discussed it in just those
terms.
I think I said something to the effect, if I remember correctly, that neo-Darwinism, in comparison with any serious scientific theory, quantum electrodynamics, is just intolerably vague and obscure. Nobody really knows what on earth it's a theory of. All the leading concepts are undefined. Not only are they undefined, but they're virtually indefinable. Go make sense of the notion of a species.
Yes, you remember we talked about that.
But make sense of natural selection. You know, half the time people talk about natural selection as a mysterious force participating among the other four fundamental forces in the cosmos. And half the time they claim it's a perfect triviality, the fact that some organisms survive. caught as it is between a force of unknown provenance and a complete triviality, my conclusion is, why should we pay any attention to this idea? And I claim on behalf of my conclusion a good deal of empirical evidence, because no one's ever seen natural selection at work. It's not documented in the literature. We can't reproduce species in the laboratory. We have no good computer simulations of natural selection. Why bother with this idea? What's left of the idea is dropped, if the idea is dropped, is the notion that life is a largely stochastic process. The current thinking among molecular geneticists, by the way.
Sure. Given all these criticisms of neo-Darwinism, given that...
Overwhelming, I'd say.
Well, I agree with you, and well, you won't get any objections from me on that. There's also, obviously, this Altenburg 16 conference taking place this summer where a bunch of scientists are getting together to basically critique the role of natural selection. Is natural selection, as the driving force of Darwinian evolution, is that entire paradigm potentially coming to an end in the near future, you think?
It will never come to an end. Let's be serious.
Okay. I
mean, anything that works to such splendid effects as a propaganda vehicle will never die. It's imperishable. But it will change.
Okay.
And that's something very different. Within 100 years, I expect to see evolutionary biology completely recast, proudly acknowledging its debt to Darwin in a magnificent exercise in spin control, but nonetheless, really, you see that happening now in molecular genetics. The people I respect, the people who are doing interesting work in molecular genetics, are, for example, Michael Lynch, who's published a very serious book on the architecture of the genome. They acknowledge what is a simple fact, that there is a profound point of incoherence in our understanding of molecular biological systems. Namely, the systems themselves seem to be stochastic in nature, waves of probability rolling through the genome, going nowhere, but the organism is anything but. And this is an old point that was mentioned in 1966 by Marco Schutzenberger, my great friend. How do you coordinate the two, the organism and the genome? It's still remarkably a mystery.
Wow, amazing. Amazing that we know there's so much we still do not understand about biology, and yet...
How about everything? How about everything? Can you give me a description of what, in terms of space and time, a living creature is? I can give you that kind of a description for a black hole, but not for a living creature. We don't have a clue. What is a living creature?
And yet the scientists will say, or the Darwinists will say, they know that it evolved by evolution, natural selection, and random mutation. They know it, but they don't even understand how to describe it.
Yeah, well, that's one of the paradoxes of evolutionary thought. That's what makes it such a beloved subject in my eyes. No matter where you go to smack it, it's smackable. And I think that's a wonderful thing in a scientific theory. Who wants a scientific theory that's really true, rock solid, and freighted with all sorts of reservations and powerful mathematical equations? That's not interesting. Give me Darwinian evolution every time.
Gives you a lot more to talk about, a lot more ways you can write grants.
It's like going into the ring against an opponent 40 pounds lighter and in a wheelchair. It's just wonderful for a boxer. Well, what would I be without such a thing?
Well, Dr. David Blinsky, we appreciate you sharing some pearls of wisdom with us today. I think if I could sum this up, it would be Darwin is dead, long live Darwin.
Yeah.
So
that's my motto. God forbid he really should die.
Well, thank you very much for being on the show with us today. We appreciate your time. This is Casey Luskin with the ID of the Future podcast signing off. Thanks for listening.
Music on ID the Future comes courtesy of composer Yuri Mamchur. Visit www.yuriproductions.com and check out his latest CD, In the Harbor. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Discovery President is Bruce Chapman. ID the Future Managing Editor is Robert Crowther. And the producer is Keith Bennett. ID the Future and ID Science in the News is copyright Discovery Institute 2006. For more information, visit www.discovery.org or www.idthefuture.com.